if we just take a brief survey of dictionary uses of the term of hardcore, I mean, the most common synonym is extreme. One can also read graphically depicted, unswervingly committed, and resistant to change. So the question here is depicting what, committed to what, and resistant to what kind of change? Now, clearly, it's the impact, the human stain left after the trauma of the Holocaust is what is most graphically depicted in the case of the hardcore. Committed to representing that condition, and of course, resistant, however one reads that resistance, let's say at least unable to change that condition by the hardcore. Now, the overall claim here is that the case of these individuals defy the models that the JDC employed, continues to throughout its history, of social welfare, of humanitarian assistance. And those models can be arguably classified, on the one hand, into productivization, and on the other hand, productivization through assistance, and on the other hand, tutelage to self-reliance, to autonomy. And one could have claimed that this reflects a kind of unstated American cultural mandate, which itself is not altogether to be disconnected from the self-reliance from the Protestant ethic, the spirit of capitalism, originally theorized by Max Weber. So this group becomes, in a way, against its will, a diaspora, a cosmopolitan diaspora of the infirm that challenge traditional models of the JDC, but also unwittingly, I think, speak to our current condition, if you like, about the search for alternatives for refugee resettlement, and of course, throughout the world, as we're experiencing, especially in the Middle East, a resurgence of this crisis of refugee and the way in which that, especially the infirm, those who cannot be returned to functionality, how international organizations can address them. But one can, of course, by no means doubt the commitment of the JDC to these people. And in one letter to from Moses Levitt, executive vice chairman, to Mr. Tracy Strong of the YMCA, the World Alliance, said, "But for all DPs and refugees in distress, JDC is determined to carry on its service until the last DP has been resettled and there is no need for further aid." Now, just a moment in terms of how the JDC itself classified those under this heading and what kind of innovative, pioneering methods they began to employ there. Well, first of all, we talked a lot about the situation with TB, which I won't go into because we covered it earlier. And of course, the United States had very strict immigration laws against entry of those with TB that date back to before the First World War, which were never rescinded. Then a kind of catch-all category, the chronically ill, which could, of course, include all variety. Then, of course, the physically handicapped, which referred to primarily those people without sight who had lost their sight, the blind, those people who had lost either one or more limbs or the functionality of any of their body parts, the mentally ill, and again, this a period whereby a lot of the plethora of psychiatric diagnoses that are available today did not yet exist in professional practice. Of course, the most obvious one being post-traumatic stress disorder. And of course, the aged and then those dependent on the aged as well. And so the argument here is that because of the fact that there was a realization, and whether or not one wants to impute any kind of value to reactions to the inability of restoring this population to quote-unquote useful citizenship, which is the priority of any nation state after all. And the heading that's used in the, let's say, theoretical literature is biopolitics, the sense that a state or a government is concerned about the health and hygiene of their citizens. that not only that they be productive in terms of civil society, politics, the economy, but also not contribute negatively to the health or hygienic components of that civil society. And this, of course, already enshrined for many, many generations, even before the current era. And the other major mandate of statehood that this group challenges is the so-called unmixing of peoples. This goes back, of course, to the end of the First World War, but then, of course, most dramatically to decolonization and the myriad of partitions throughout the world that accompany decolonization. Of course, we're most familiar with the various partitions that have affected Israel, but of course, if we take the case of the two Irelands, India and Pakistan, and of course, Greece and Turkey, that the issue of the unmixing of peoples as essential for sovereignty, as a dominant and a norm that the international community should not only respect but adhere to, this group of hardcore defies that logic, because here we have a group, and I will hear later that Malben in Israel was able to assist a significant number of them, but not in their entirety. And of course, the U.S., because of immigration restrictions, was not able to patriate these individuals. So instead, they form a kind of, if you like, individual case-by-case diaspora, and where in Europe, in the cases of their displacement, despoliation, the murder of their families. So we end up with this rather challenging paradox that arguably the group most traumatized, most devastated in the Holocaust end up having to stay closest to the land where they suffered the most, to various European countries. Now, in terms of the, at least, let's say, provisional ideas about various steps towards taking care of these individual populations, one of the first other major paradox, in addition to the fact that they ended up essentially restrained to the European continent, not Israel and Europe, is that they came upon another paradox of the condition of refugees, which is, though it's clear that a refugee is someone injured in their diplomatic status, someone disabled in their diplomatic status, but must be firm in their physical status in order to receive any redress towards that diplomatic condition, and essentially that refugees must be healthy, therefore. So the kind of arrangements, diplomatic arrangements, that JDC was forced to undertake involved a medical dimension to addressing their diplomatic status as well. And I just want to point out to the way this was conceived in some of the literature as well. You'll just give me one moment. That this is from 1950, and it's an appeal to voluntary organizations. So it's a turn beyond other international, either state organizations, and most explicitly the IRO, the International Refugee Organization. Another element that was not mentioned earlier is that there were perceptions that the IRO was seen as complicit with national entities and committees that had incorporated a degree of anti-Semitism into their attitudes toward taking these specific refugees on. And just in the same way that the language of trauma had yet to be accepted, had yet to be realized, integrated, the language of Holocaust survivors and even what the Holocaust as a understandable plan, that the survivors were not merely political persecuted refugees of Nazi Europe throughout, but were the victims of a very specific, for some, the main war aim of Nazi Germany, to destroy the Jewish people in Europe. That was not accepted to the same extent that it is today. So the language of JDC in their appeal to civil society and NGOs: individual sponsorships was the idea that will include the assurance of future care to solve the problem of a portion of these people. facilities and financial requirements for their care would be assured, but such sponsorships may be provided by churches or other organizations or by individual persons, clubs, or groups through the medium of a competent public or voluntary organization which would be prepared to assume administrative responsibility. Arrangements such as the following might be visualized: the offer of sponsorship or adoption by an individual family, church congregation, or parish, religious organization, social service agency, fraternal society, service club, or an association whose members belong to a particular ethnic group. So I would submit that this is a pioneering, relevant, and innovative modality beyond the idea of working through a state organization to secure productivization or teaching towards self-reliance, that the turn towards civil society, NGOs, and adoption on a case-by-case basis, if it hasn't been yet seen in the historical literature as innovative and pioneering, I'm confident that one day it will. Thank you for your attention.